racing the clock on a big trade deal.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. It could be the biggest U.S. trade agreement in more than a decade, a deal now being hammered out with the South Korean government. But now some American companies are saying, hold on here. They're threatening to withdraw their support with a deadline just days away. From Seoul, Financial Times reporter Anna Fifield tells us what the gripe is.
Well, at the moment, these trade negotiations are going on in Seoul, and they are very intense. There's a lot of disagreement between both the sides, even now, after 10 rounds of negotiations. So I think U.S. companies like Chevron and Texaco are starting to worry that the U.S. Negotiators will give up too much to the South Korean side in order to secure this deal.
Well, this opposition coming in the 11th hour, if you will, is a problem for the Bush administration, is it not?
Yes, it is, because the Bush administration needs to pass this trade deal, if it is agreed, through Congress very quickly. President Bush's authority to fast-track deals through the Congress expires shortly. And if major U.S. companies such as Chevron and Texaco raise doubts about this deal, that would certainly weaken the Bush administration's authority.
Is there any way in sight to get this deal done in time?
Yes, there is. It will be very difficult, and it's probably not going to be the big bang kind of deal that both sides were hoping for. But the negotiators are working very hard. They say they remain optimistic that they can close some of the gaps and finish this deal by Saturday.
Anna Fifield with the Financial Times in Seoul. Thank you for joining us.
Sure.
Wall Street just couldn't get over more horrible housing numbers yesterday. The Dow closed down 71 to 12,397. The Nasdaq finished 18 points lower to 2437. And the S&P was off 9 points to 1428. Meantime, the price of oil is up for a seventh day, and it's mainly over speculation that tensions might boil over with Iran. Traders have been betting Iran's detention of British servicemen could escalate and disrupt oil supplies. Prices spiked $5 in just 7 minutes last night to more than $68 a barrel, apparently because of a rumor, just a rumor, that Britain had dispatched troops to try rescuing the captives. The speculation may be calming down a bit this morning. Trading in Singapore crude has fallen back to just above $64. I don't have to tell you all the things you can already do with a cell phone, but here's something new. Banking by Cell. AT&T and four major banks say they've worked out an agreement so customers can access account info and pay bills over cell phones. As Pat Loeb reports, this could all pay off someday, quite literally.
It's been a tantalizing promise, waving your cell phone at a credit card reader to pay for things, the way they do in Europe and Japan. We're not there yet, but AT&T spokesman Mark Siegel says it's only a matter of time.
We hope that what we've announced today is the seed that will sprout into something really big.
Siegel says consumers first have to get comfortable using their phone for financial transactions. If a phone is lost, the financial information on it can be removed remotely. There will be no extra fees, at least initially. Bancorp South piloted the system. Vice President Michael Lindsay says customers loved it.
Being able to see what their balance was right before they made a purchase, they thought they were able to make a more informed decision.
Bancorp South, Wachovia, SunTrust, and Regions Bank have all signed on now. That may be the most significant development. Analysts say one reason the U.S. is behind in cell phone banking is until now, banks and carriers couldn't agree on a business plan. I'm Pat Loeb for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Science and technology reports are supported by Boston Scientific, committed to delivering what's next in medical technology to help clinicians improve and extend lives. BostonScientific.com.
Maybe you're familiar with the term open source. Usually it's used in the context of describing computer software. Linux, for example, a program that's publicly available, free, and users have a hand in creating or changing it. Well, this whole idea of porous knowledge and mass collaboration has begun to take off in the science lab, too. But as Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from the Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio, some old school rules may be holding things back.
Good science is time-consuming. Just think how many years researchers have been working on cures for AIDS and cancer. Chemistry professor Jean-Claude Bradley says one reason things take so long is that a lot of lab work never sees the light of day.
Most of what we do in the lab is actually failed experiments. That information typically is not shared.
If it could be shared, Bradley says researchers wouldn't have to repeat failed experiments and could save time. So he decided to try something new. He and his students at Drexel University now post all of their lab experiments on a wiki or website for anyone to see. And they're not just working in the hypothetical. They're searching for chemical compounds that could fight malaria. Bradley says he purposely chose a disease that was largely being ignored by pharmaceutical companies.
There's not a lot of money in malaria. The people that are sick don't tend to have a lot of money, so it's actually a really good application for this kind of work.
The concept of sharing scientific research is so new, Bradley's coined a phrase for it, open notebook science. But openness comes with a price. Bradley's online lab page has a disclaimer. Any contributions made on the site are given over to the public domain. No lucrative patent deals, no blockbuster drugs. Dr. Bob Cook-Deegan at Duke University says in a corporate setting, shareholders wouldn't likely open their wallets for open science.
If what you're basically creating is information and then you're sharing it for free with everybody in the world, you're never going to make them any money. They're going to think you haven't used their money very well and they're not going to be very happy with you.
Even in academia, open science has drawbacks. Posting lab results online can make it difficult for researchers to publish their work in a respected journal. Monica Bradford is executive editor at Science Magazine.
Anything posted online is a publication. You know, our policies are having to evolve and we're having to watch these different developments. But our conditions for submission say that you have to say you have not already published the material that you're submitting to us for review.
Bradley will come up against those policies soon. He and his students are almost ready to present their data in print. Bradley says they'll keep looking for a journal willing to break ground and publish their results. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.